Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. My name is Phil Deanna and I'm your guest host tonight, pinch hitting for Michael Gray. And I'm excited to be joined tonight by Jan and Anna from Palo Alto. And they participate regularly in the Zen Center of Palo Alto, California. And that's going to be the subject of our good news. Welcome, Jan. Welcome, Anna.
Hi.
Are you there?
Yes.
And can you hear clearly? Oops,
I
what?
Can.
Good. Wait. Let me just... Looks like we've got good news too, huh? Let me just try something. There. Good news, Jan? Jan, are you there?
I sure am.
And Anna, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, good. Now we can have our conversation.
Good.
So you both are regular participants at the Zen Center in Palo Alto. And we thought we'd talk tonight, you know, about participating, you know, the benefits and the joy and the love of participating in our local sanghas, and ours is the Palo Alto Zen Center. So, Jan, as a long-time member, long-time person of participation in the Zen Center, what would you say that it how has it affected your life?
Oh gosh, so many ways. But
yeah.
To me, the great part about having sangha or our regular Tuesday nights to go to is that it's a chance to get together with other people that practice or, you know, do the Zen practice. And rather than just meditating on our own, we have a chance to meditate together and then to discuss anything that's been coming up for us that we've been looking at in our lives. And, well, there's a lot to be said about that, but I think the main thing for me is it gives me a chance to share with the rest of Sangha to be... And by sharing to see what process is going on for me that might help me not be suffering with different situations or to just share in the joy of something that I've seen. And likewise, if other people are sharing, I get a chance to look internally to see what they're talking about may apply to my life, how those things come up for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that certainly is something that does help us in our own practice.
Oh, it's tremendously helpful.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the one place I know that I can go where I can drop everything that might be expected in the outside world or that, you know, our society puts a lot of pressure on of the how, just a lot of things. And it's a place we can go to drop that, to be together. It's not social, but it's intimate in the sharing that we can do to to help and to see what's going on in our own lives.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And Anna, as a not so long and yet very ardent participator in the Zen Center in Palo Alto, what would you say to that about how does it participating in the Zen Center affect your life?
I think it has lots of effects that I can definitely resonate with what Jan was sharing. I think for me also it's about kind of like making a statement to myself about what's important to me.
Mm-hmm.
So like carving out like actual time, you know, that I'm going to spend, you know, like formally in my practice, I find is... I don't know, on some kind of internal level, it just, like, I feel like it makes a statement for me about, like, kind of what's important to me.
Yeah. All right, you feel like it makes a statement about what's important, that it, in that sense, it enhances your life. You remember in daily life more about, you know, more about practicing type thing?
Yeah. Yeah, and also, like, you know, when we sit, we come back to our breath, kind of. I feel like coming to the Zen Center, for me, it's like kind of a check-in, you know, like whatever else is going on with me. It's like this is some time where I can like really, you know, check in with what's going on with me.
Yeah, what a great analogy. So like going to the Zen Center is like coming back to one big breath, huh?
That's what it really feels like, yeah. And it's like this just kind of like a safe place. And the other thing I think I find really, you know, like I guess transformational is the participating part of it. Like this practice is something which I just have so much gratitude for, that I just want to participate in whatever way I possibly can, just to just sort of express that. You know,
yeah.
Because
if you don't, it
won't be there. And I want it. You know, if it wasn't there when I needed it, or I do need it. You know, I always need it, but it's like in those times of crisis or whatever. It's like if I don't show up, you know, then it might not be there for whomever, including myself. You know, so it's like I use it or lose it kind of thing. And that's true with the practice for myself. Like if I'm not sitting, you know, on a regular basis for myself, like that my practice won't be there for those times that, you know, every day, but in particular those times of crisis. But it's also true with the Zen Center. You know, if I'm not showing up and, you know, expressing that gratitude, then, you know, I really appreciate everyone else showing that same type of gratitude and by showing up. And I just, so it's like, it's a two-way thing, you know. I feel like it's like, oh, so beneficial for me when I do show up. And it also feels like, in some way, it's like an expression of my gratitude by showing up.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's a wonderful reminder to all of us who are listening about the two-way, two benefits that we can get from our sitting practice in that sense of, and then coming regularly to the Zen Center supports that. How about you, Jan? Do you have anything you'd like to add to that?
Well, what Anna was saying just made me realize that the joy and the joy and gratitude that I think any of us experience from participating in Sangha or our Zen community is that the support, there's no question about the support. We go there, and it's a privileged, what we call, as a Sangha, the privileged environment, which means we know that whatever we say or whatever anyone says is going to be honored, it's confidential, and we can share it from, we can share from the heart, you know, look at the process we're going through, whether, you know, wherever it is on the realm of things, whether it's joyful or we're in crisis, whatever it is, and know that we're totally safe in that environment. It's the one place we can go that no matter what's going on in our lives, we have support to share that or just to be there to support others in sharing.
Yeah, so in a sense, to sum up, it's just a wonderful support to a practice that we live daily, and it's like the joy of the practice. We can come together Tuesday evenings and share that joy in that sense of feeling the support and the practice, practicing together.
Yeah, and can I add one other thing, Phil?
Yes.
Well, it's just that support just seems so, I don't know another word to use. I'm trying to think of another word even besides support, because I remember years ago when I meditated for a few years on my own, which was wonderful, but when I had other people to meditate with and then to share experiences of what we would see, things that might be revealed to us in meditation and in life, it allows things to speed up. You're not just looking alone, you're looking together. And so as people share, it allows you to see things you might not have realized for yourself.
Yes.
And that's just tremendously helpful.
Oh, it is. So it really moves things along exponentially, as you would say.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, it just keeps it going. Well, you know, thank you both so much for calling in, and that, because that is tremendous good news for all of us. And I know we would really love it if people out there in radio land, that it were close, if you're in the Palo Alto area or the San Jose Bay area, to come on over to the Zen Center, because it is a powerful experience, I'd have to say, on Tuesdays and Sundays and during the morning, early morning sits. And you can find our information on the website through the Zen Monastery site, then go to Palo Alto. So thank you both, Jan and Anna. I really enjoyed this conversation with you.
Thanks, Phil.
All right. Bye. Have a good evening.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Goodbye. Bye. So we want to welcome now everyone. We want to welcome Anne, a monk from the Monastery Zen Center. Did I say that right? Yep. Monastery Peace Center. She's going to be with us this evening. Good evening.
Hi, Phil.
Hi, Anne.
How are you?
I'm great. And you?
Well, I'm good. I really enjoyed that conversation y'all just had.
Yeah, it was quite a nice conversation, actually, to talk about our Zen Center here in Palo Alto.
Yeah, you know what it reminded me of is that what came through for me is that our participation matters.
It does, doesn't it? That is so true.
Yeah. And, you know, self-hate would have us say that, you know, oh, it doesn't matter, nobody's noticing me, you know, I can just kind of skirt around the edges. But we really have an impact. Every one of us in participating makes a difference.
Yes, and you know, like what Anna and Jan were saying, how it moves things exponentially. Really, it does move us along when we are all show up together.
Yes.
It's like it really puts the fire under our practice, doesn't it?
Yes, and it's to me, you know, when I sit with a group, it's such a different experience because if my foot's hurting or, you know, I want to itch, I'm much more likely to stay still and maintain that privileged environment because I know there's others there with me.
Exactly.
And I want to give that respect to everyone else, and then I get to benefit from that as well.
Yes, that is so true. That's wonderful. Yeah.
And then as I think Jan mentioned, that the power of having other people there looking with you in a group is so helpful.
It really is. There's nothing like it, actually.
Yeah, we're able to go deeper. We see things we just couldn't see on our own.
Mm-hmm.
The power of Sangha.
Mm-hmm. The power of Sangha. And the power of commitment. I know in our Tuesday groups we have folks that really have just said, okay, this is it. I'm committed. We commit, you know, I commit to Tuesday or I commit to Sunday.
Yeah.
And the power that they experience in keeping that commitment. So,
yeah.
You know, I really encourage people to do that, commit if they have a local Sangha or something, really just to commit to that.
Show up, no debate. I'm going regardless.
Right, exactly. Well, you know, Anne, we have a caller ready. Are you ready for receiving a call?
Sure. I hope you're all practiced technically, and
we'll see.
Oh, good.
So, caller, could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Sherry from San Francisco.
Hi.
Hi. Hi, Phil. Hi, Anne.
Hi.
I'm so happy to be able to call. Normally, I'm picking up my son from school, and it's great to have the opportunity to call in.
Well, it's great to hear your voice. What's going on?
Well, so it's fascinating. I initially had this impulse to call to offer some gratitude and a success story about the Making a Change for Good book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been fascinating just in the short, what's it been, 10 minutes of hold time on the phone, how conditioning can just hijack that initial good feeling.
So were you aware of the self-talk?
Oh, yeah. Like, it was so funny. I just thought, oh, I'll just call because I've had just a fabulous time with this 30-day retreat in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted to express that because, you know, maybe there are people out there who don't know about the book, and it's been great. And then all of a sudden, it's wild, sitting on the phone, like, listening, you know, first of all, they want to practice what I'm going to say. You know,
what?
Pardon me?
I didn't understand that. What did you say?
Well, first of all, like, the voices want to practice what's going to
said. Oh, they want to practice what you're going to say. Okay.
And then, of course, suddenly then they're into a lot of self-talk around, well, wait a minute. Has it really been that successful for you? You know, let's look at this.
Oh, evaluation and comparing. Two brutal tools of self-hate.
I know. But it was great. I mean, I feel very grateful now, in addition, to be able to have the opportunity to watch how they want to take things away.
Yes. You got an unexpected 10-minute workshop.
I did. That's a great way to look at it. It's true.
Yeah. You know, if we could just approach life like that, every opportunity is every minute is our a little mini workshop for us to see how we cause ourselves to suffer.
Yes, and I think this one is particularly valuable for me because I the reason I wanted to call is that it's often very hard for me to take the time to celebrate these sorts of things, you know, to stop and to say, like, wow, this feels great, because they're so often the voices are taking me into that next place of what's wrong.
Exactly, that what we talk about as the something wrong, not enough mind.
Yes.
Yeah, and so it's really... it really takes a lot of paying attention to stop and acknowledge and celebrate and say, this is what I've accomplished. This is what's here to celebrate.
Yeah, right. And then I'm again, just want to say, I mean, I'm particularly grateful then to be able to see how quickly they want to take it away and what a wonderful joy it is then to be able to talk to you and to be reconnected with that again. Like, no, wait, this is a great feeling. I'm not going to get, you know, hijacked into something else.
Right, because the voices would want you to believe, oh, it wasn't that good. I mean, let's really look at this. Let's start evaluating it and really realize that, no, it's not that great. And yet you can let go of that and realize, no, there's something here to celebrate. I accomplished this 30-day retreat. It was wonderful, and I want to share it.
Yes.
I want to express gratitude and let other people know about it.
Yes. And so back to that, let me just say, I loved, I mean, one of the things that was so great about the 30-day retreat is how... the way it was organized, it made it so possible to do.
Uh-huh. And is this the first time you've done it, Sherry?
It is the first time.
Uh-huh.
But not the last. I'm going to start again.
Because the reason I asked is a lot of people do it over and over again.
I bet, yeah. I can imagine, like, already I'm thinking of sort of, you know, the next thing that I want to use to work with it because it was possible. I think initially before I started it, you know, I had all sorts of self-talk around, of course, you know, how hard it's going to be to keep up, and you know,
the voices are setting you up for failure before you even begin.
Exactly.
And your experience of it was quite the opposite, that it was quite possible.
Right. And the thing that's so great about this book and the retreat in it is that so much of it is also just looking at when we don't keep our commitments, and that's of course okay. That's part of the workshop.
How do we not keep our commitments?
Exactly.
Out of it. Mm-hmm.
So I love that because there's really no way to fail.
Yes, there's no way to fail. Isn't that great? Isn't that great that you can't do it wrong?
I love that.
It is so great because all conditioning is based on, well, this is how you're doing it wrong. This is how you're failing. That, you know, as you're talking about, it's the whole setup, evaluation of, oh, it wasn't really that good, or you're not going to be able to do it right, or all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's no way to do it wrong. It's not possible to fail. Just kind of cuts conditioning off at the knees.
And then just hearing, I can't tell you, like, I just felt myself just let go hearing you say that.
Oh.
Because, you know, because it's not just about doing the retreat, but also, of course, you know, I'm nervous about calling in and, you know, I'm going to say the wrong thing. I'm not going to be articulate. And then it's like just hearing you say that, I just thought, oh, there's nothing wrong. There's no way to do it wrong.
Yeah, and there's such a genuine authenticity in wanting to say thank you and wanting to express gratitude, and conditioning wants to try to take that away from you.
Yes. And I almost hung up a couple times while I was waiting.
Isn't that interesting?
And I'm so glad I didn't, because it's true. You know, the other thing is conditioning wants to make it about me.
Uh-huh.
When actually the initial impulse was, and I think this is often, I mean, the impulse of gratitude is, it's not about me.
Uh-huh.
It's about, you know, here's a gift I've been given, and I want to express that. But then suddenly, you know, conditioning wants to make it, you know, about me and my prize, my call, who, you know.
Make it about you in terms of the call and how you shouldn't have really called. And is that kind
of... Yeah, and how, in, you know, making, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Making it seem as if it matters what I say or don't say.
Uh-huh.
Or,
right, you're gonna look foolish or whatever it would say. And
exactly.
Not about you, it's about wanting to express gratitude. So what do you think enabled you not to hang up on with those several times when you almost did?
Ah, well, I think it was returning back to that. I actually had the book beside me, which I'm glad I was sort of, you know, looking at it. And I think it was returning back to, you know, well, what if there are people out there who haven't seen this book, or they haven't done the retreat, or maybe they think it's going to be too hard, or, you know, what if,
yes,
what if one call could help, you know, just, you know, one person maybe pick it up and look at it. And I felt like, well, that's what I
wanted
to share.
Yes. Yeah, it's, to me, it goes back to our participation matters.
Ah, yes. Yeah. Yeah. And maybe that's part of it, too, listening to the good news where, you know, they were talking about participation, too. It's, I'd hate to hang up at that point.
Yeah, because there was that part of you, that genuine desire to want to let people know about it, and you weren't going to let all those voices talk you out of being able to do that.
Yeah, and I'm very glad I didn't.
Well, good. I'm glad you called.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. I'll enjoy listening to the rest of the show.
Okay, thanks, Sherry.
All right. Goodbye. Thank you both. Bye-bye.
Thank
Bye.
You, Sherry. That was really good. We're glad she called, aren't we, Ann?
Yeah, it's a great book.
Yeah, it certainly is a great book. And all these reminders of all the different ways that we have to practice and things that help us in our practice, it's really wonderful.
That's what I was thinking about when she said she had the book next to her.
Yeah.
When she called, and as she was getting talked out of, you know, getting talked into hanging up, she looked at the book and said, no, I'm not going to. And just made me realize how important concrete reminders are,
yes,
to have around us, that, you know, what's important to us, what do we want to choose?
Yes, it certainly is important. It certainly is for me.
Mm-hmm.
I know that. You know, and I want to give out the phone number for folks to call in.
Speaking of
that, I'll just do that right now. So the number you can call in to talk with Ann is 888-472-6442. So if there's anybody else out there that is, you know, a little bit nervous about it, go ahead and give it a try. It's not that hard.
Well, I remember the first time I called in, I was very nervous. So.
Uh-huh. I can certainly understand that.
Uh-huh.
So we have another caller, Ann.
Okay.
So we'll go right to that caller. So good evening. Caller, would you like to introduce yourself?
Oh, this is Susan.
Hi, Susan.
Hi, I wasn't sure I had the right number or not.
You certainly do.
Oh, good. So I originally was going to call. I've been thinking about calling for a few weeks. I called once before, and it was about myself and a decision I was trying to make. But since then, I have a son that's about 22 that's really struggling. This is hard. And he has a bad depression, and he's bipolar, that label. And talks to me, and he's so filled with rage and anger and frustration and despair that I can only listen to him for a little bit, and then I'm suffering just as much as he is because I don't know how to help him or what to do for him. And medically, I've done everything I can as far as medications, and but it's been going on for years, and it's pretty relentless.
Mm-hmm. So
I'm trying to understand how I can kind of take care of myself and him,
yeah,
in whatever way possible.
Yeah, how to take care of yourself and him in that situation.
Yeah, and his mind is so strong and so negative and so angry. It's painful to just listen to him and try to keep any amount of sort of, okay, these are just thoughts. You know, it's like sitting under Niagara Falls of negativity.
Mm.
And I fear for him. I mean, I fear that he will take his life at some point if he doesn't get out of this. And in the meantime, my life is not necessarily on hold, but in a way it is, because this is sort of my front and center issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, you know, I talked to him about spirituality and about thoughts and the power of thoughts and how thoughts are just, you know, everything I know to say, nothing really lands for him.
Mm-hmm.
But to sit back and do nothing also doesn't work for me. And I don't know how to make peace with the situation either.
Uh-huh.
And just say, well, the worst really could happen and I may just have to accept that. Versus trying to find the right thing to say that somehow it's going to make a difference.
So kind of struggling with wanting to make a difference for him and not being able to, and feeling a lot of stuff come up in you as you're talking to him.
Oh yeah, I mean when he finally leaves, he does work. You know, I've got a horrible headache and I'm about to collapse. So I thought, I'm not calling in because I feel too terrible. And then I thought, well, if you don't call in, you don't do something, you're going to be left alone with your own thoughts again. And it's that sort of definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results.
Yes.
That I, maybe someone else might have a thought different than what I have because I keep doing the same thing. And he has the same reaction and I end up feeling bad.
Mm-hmm. And how would you describe the same thing that you're doing over and over again?
Oh, just trying to convince him to live.
Convince
him to not believe his thoughts.
Uh-huh.
That it isn't as horrible as he pictures it.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's kind of all about words.
Yes.
And failing pretty miserably, actually. You know, I hold him, I hold his hand, I try to talk, but and this maybe this is not, you know, maybe this is just nothing I can do but live through it. But that's how I feel. It's living through it.
Mm-hmm.
And
are
it's
you,
the.
Are you aware of what's going on for you when you're with him? Are you aware of the self-talk inside? Kind of any. What I'm wondering is if you have a sense for yourself of what it means about you that you haven't been able to find a way out of this.
No, I'm not aware. But when you ask, I go. My mind, what I think is, well, probably means I'm a failure as a mother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a very difficult place in which to find acceptance for yourself, I'm hearing.
Yeah, I think that I just wish I knew what to do or what to say.
Yeah.
And I've exhausted all the resources that I have medically and every which way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like I feel like all I'm left with is just suffering
mm-hmm.
and waiting for something really bad to happen.
Uh-huh. So you've tried all these avenues and nothing's really worked.
Nothing's changing. In fact, it appears to be getting worse.
Mm-hmm.
I committed him once, and I may have to do that again, but I don't know that that's the answer.
Mm.
And mostly I just feel horribly sad when I talk to him because I know he's suffering,
mm-hmm.
but his mind is so ironclad, nothing can seem to get in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I also think at this point I've got to find a way to... It's not going to do him any good for me to just collapse.
Right.
And
yes, I don't know if you've read Sherry's parenting book, but one of the things in there that I just love is if you're on an airplane, they always say, put your oxygen mask on first before
mm-hmm.
helping your child.
Yeah, and then, you know, in fact, I mean, even calling on this call is my way of helping myself.
Yeah.
Because, frankly, all I want to do is run away, you know, as far away as I can get. And when I would say my original thing, the conversation about me and my next, because I have two sons, and I thought they were both going off to college, and I was going to have an empty nest and start the next chapter of my life and all these plans that aren't exactly... playing out, but now I'm thinking maybe I just default to plan B and try to pick up my life again and start doing what I can, even though I have this challenge of my son.
Yeah, it sounded like you had certain expectations about the way life would go, and it didn't go that way.
No, it hasn't gone that way at all, not for a long time.
Yeah.
And in fact, that's what he's so angry about, that life is not the way he wants it to be, you know.
Right, yeah. Well, I think that's the challenge for all of us. We have this idea of how life is supposed to go, and it never goes that way, and then we're left with all of these feelings about that, and how do we, I mean, that's really the question, how do we accept life as it is?
Well, or even in the worst case that I may lose him.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, that's just like, oh, my God, I don't know if I could live through that. So it's worse than, which is certainly not the way I want it to go.
Right, right. That's not what you would wish for him.
No, not at all. But I feel helpless and don't like it and don't like feeling like I'm waiting for things to just happen to me.
Uh-huh.
In fact, when I was going to call earlier, one of the things I had been thinking about was leaving my husband and moving to the beach myself and starting sort of a new life and getting into that whole, what's the right thing to do, what's the wrong thing to do, and that there's a right decision I could make here and a wrong decision. And now it doesn't feel very important.
Yeah, I would think, do you have a sense that that's really, that doesn't exist, that right decision and that wrong decision?
Well, I've listened into a few calls, and I've heard people talk about making decisions, and Sherry's and some of the responses around sort of, as long as you think there's a right and wrong decision, there's really not a decision, you know, that no matter what I did, I would end up beating myself up, period. I would never make the right decision.
Right, because it's just about getting beat up for making the wrong decision, whatever decision you make.
Yeah, and I have that sense, and I think that's partly why I haven't done anything, because I, in my heart, I don't trust myself to not do that and to break up a family and do all kinds of things only to turn around and just hate myself more. Doesn't appeal to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel stuck, you know, and I...
Well, let me ask you this. Given where you are right now, what do you think would be a way to take care of yourself?
Cry.
Mm-hmm. Cry. Just allow the feelings to come up and feel them. Just let yourself acknowledge what a hard, hard situation this is.
Yeah. I think because it's gone on so long, it's like I'm ready for it to be over, and I'm not going to cry anymore about it. I'm not going to let myself feel it. Because it's gone on for so long.
That's partly what makes it so hard, I'm hearing, is that it's because it has gone on for so long, and it is so long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because if I really let myself feel how bad I feel, I'm afraid I'll feel even more hopeless.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's dealing with sort of a chronic, someone who's chronically ill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And trying to be there for them.
And so does it feel kind of like what you're doing to try to cope is to push the feelings away?
Now, I didn't used to, but I do nowadays, because I'm just angry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, enough of this already, I'm sick of crying. I've cried all I can cry.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I guess that doesn't really help, because I don't know what else to do. That, and sit down and meditate, and that's it. That's all I can think to do. Which I guess is just a way of sort of being with it one more time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a situation in life that's calling you to be with yourself in a way that is difficult.
Yeah, it's very, very hard. And I always look for something to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we all do. It's one of those situations where, you know, we have whatever feelings we have about our life experiences, and it's so painful to feel those, we'd rather go do something rather than sit and be with those feelings.
Yeah, actually what I just thought is one thing I haven't done with him in a while is let him see how painful it is for me.
You
and in some ways, maybe that wouldn't be wrong, because I keep thinking, well, if I crumble, we're both sunk, but...
So you're trying to be strong for both of you.
Yeah, but it just dawned on me that why bother in a way? You know, let him see. And it's really hard for me, and I've been trying to not do that. And maybe
well,
I will let him see next time.
Well, it sounds like even when he's not there, you're trying to not feel that stuff. You're trying to not have your experience.
Yeah, I don't like this experience.
Right,
It should be gone by now. It should be over, and it's not. And I was okay with it for the first couple of years, but as the years wear on, it's harder and harder to be with it.
Mm-hmm. And
like, if I accept it, it's going to be here forever, huh?
Right. In my experience, that voice that comes in and says, this should be over now, I'm over this, I'm done with this, this is enough,
yeah,
makes it even harder.
Yeah, I guess I'm afraid it's going to just go on forever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in accepting it, I'm allowing it to go on for. I know that doesn't make sense, but that's how it
right.
feels inside. That
yes,
if I
the belief is that if I really accept this, then it's resignation. It's going to go on forever.
Right.
And so then we get caught up in this system of attempting, trying not to accept it, trying not to feel what's going on, hoping that somehow we can control the situation that way. And it doesn't work. All it does is tie us up in knots.
It's true. I just kind of feel like I'm getting a little bit beat up by life.
And so what do you think, I don't know where you are in the country and what time it is where you are, but what do you think would be kind to do for yourself when you hang up from this call?
Well, what I think is go do my meditation, just sit for a while, unwind, and then probably talk to my husband.
To spend some quiet time alone.
Yeah, I think so.
To create some space for all of those feelings that are going on around this very difficult situation, to let them be, to see if you can almost like metaphorically put your arms around them and say, it's okay. It's okay to feel whatever you're feeling. It's okay.
Yeah.
I see how difficult this is for you, and I want to hear about it. You know, it's like having a lap to go sit in, having the lap of acceptance to go sit in, and just feel whatever you're feeling, and allow yourself to just breathe into it and be there.
Yeah, I think if I can do that for me, maybe I can do it more for him. I mean, when he comes to me, he wants answers. Why is the world the way it is? Why is there this? Why is there hypocrisy? Why? I mean, he's a real idealist. And I can get stuck in the content of what he's asking.
Yes.
Instead
yes.
of sort of trying to stick with, instead of saying, I don't have any answers, I just see you feel bad and I'm here. And, you know, if I couldn't remember that, but I guess I could start with myself.
Exactly. That's
I think that's what you're saying.
Yes,
and then maybe I would remember when I'm with him, because I start to get into the content, sort of the rise and fall of Western civilization. I don't know why it's going to hell. I don't know. All I know is you're suffering and so am I.
Yes. Yes, and what you're saying is so important. We get pulled into the content. We get sucked into the content. And really, all you can offer him is, I'm right here, and whatever you're feeling is okay.
No, that's good.
I
will have to literally go write that down or I will forget it.
Yeah, maybe you can make yourself a big sign and have it be something you look at when you wake up in the morning or when you go to bed at night. No matter what I'm feeling, it's okay.
Or no matter what he's feeling, it's okay.
Doesn't matter what he's feeling, it's okay. And we don't have the answers. We don't know what's going to happen. But we can be here with whatever's going on right now.
Okay. That I think I can do.
Yeah, we can take the next breath. And, you know, really appreciate ourselves for living a human life that is very, very, very challenging.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. You know, and let ourselves know, wow, good
job. I was going to say, I'm not sure I'm up for it, but I don't know if I am or I'm not. I must be because I'm doing it, but it's...
Yeah. And it certainly would be a lot... nicer to have somebody who cared about you and appreciated you go through it with you, and you can offer that to yourself.
Mm. Yeah, I can see that. Okay, I can do that. I think I'll write it on my palm, and then I can have like
write
a cheat sheet.
You can even make a bracelet, have it on your wrist, and then it'll get you everywhere. Well, and the important thing to know, it's so wonderful that the breath can be that reminder for us. You know, you can take a breath. Whenever you can remember, come back to the breath and let that be your reminder that it's okay. Whatever I'm feeling is okay.
So sort of like an anchor for him and for me?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, because I think part of it is remembering it when I'm with him, but then I don't even remember it for myself. So if I could do that for me, I could maybe do it for him.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that's been coming up for me repeatedly during this radio show is something that Sherry's teacher said to her is that we'll do for the love of others what we won't do for ourselves.
Yeah.
And you can find that place of acceptance for you because you're seeing how important it is for your son when you're with your son.
Yeah.
Because that's what he needs. He needs somebody who can be there and know experientially that it's okay.
But God, I forget.
Yeah, we all do.
I literally forget.
Yeah. That's why we need those reminders.
I appreciate saying it. Huh?
That's why we need those reminders.
Yeah, and I think also somebody else saying it, because I can't say it to myself a lot and it doesn't work. And I need, you know, we need somebody else, I think, to say it enough.
Well, I hope you will create those reminders for yourself. Write yourself.
I will.
Put them up where you'll see them.
Okay, I'll do that when I will. I will do that.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Susan. You are listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber with our guest, Anne from the Monastery. And Anne, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll come right back.
Okay.
Watchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Watchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Tonight we have our guest, Anne, from the Monastery Peace Center. And Anne, that was a really powerful call, I'd say, and I thought it was your reminders to Susan were really very wonderful.
Well, it sounds like a really challenging situation she's in, and I know that for all of us we have those situations in our lives, and wow, it's so important to have reminders every day that practice is what's going to get us through it.
Yeah, that is true. Well, you know, Anne, we have another caller.
Oh, wow.
So we'll welcome this caller. So, caller, can you introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Christina.
Hi, Christina. Well, how are you?
Hi. I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you for calling in. What's going on?
No problem. So I've got a raging obsessive duality back and forth debate, which goes like this. I get told a story that my business is in financial ruin and I need to do everything I can to clean it up and stop sabotaging. I get these specific words, stop sabotaging my financial success.
Mm-hmm.
Then I have lots of time to work on it, and ego talks me out of working on it, so I basically procrastinate. So I'm stuck in this, I know how to fix it, but I just can't get there. And then what, it's come to a head because tomorrow there's a local Zen center and they're starting a 5-day meditation session, which I've signed up for, and I still have the choice to either go or not go, and I'm probably going to go, but I'm getting a whole head full of 5 days of meditating. Are you kidding? You've got really big problems you need to address. And then I've got another side, which is almost like a probably a pseudo-Zen saying, you know, arguing. It's basically arguing, so it doesn't feels like ego, but it's on the other side saying, you know, when I meditate, everything else falls into place, and I'll be twice as efficient next week, and if I don't go, I'm just going to procrastinate for another 3 weeks. So I've got this back and forth about whether meditation's the ticket or I should be spending the time actually addressing, quote, actually addressing my problems, unquote.
Mm-hmm. The problem of your business falling apart.
Yeah.
It sounds like you've got two dualities going on. One of, you really have to work on this business. It's going to pieces. And the other side of that saying, procrastination, oh, we don't have to address it right now. And yeah. Then the debate about whether you should go on a meditation retreat. Oh, yeah, you should. It'd be really good for you. And, oh, no, are you crazy? 5 days away? You've got to stay here and work on your business.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think is the way out of that, stepping outside of that, knowing, because I think you do, that there's no resolution inside of those dualities? You could be in those debates forever.
I do know that. And what the trick is, I feel like the system's gotten a hold of that language.
Mm-hmm.
And so the system itself will say, well, you know there's no solution in obsession, so blah, blah, blah. You shouldn't.
So it'll obsess about that.
Yeah. What's that?
It will obsess about how there's
yeah.
no solution.
Yeah, I should know, and I'm just intellectualizing, and there's no right answer, just do anything. Oh, you're obsessing again equals you're a bad person.
Isn't that great? It says you should know, and you're just intellectualizing, and there it is, intellectualizing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So a lot of hateful voices coming at you.
And you wouldn't believe your hateful voices if you just did your practice more. I mean, it's just like, God, like unquenchable. So yeah, this is the ticket where I usually get the like, okay, as long as I'm going to be in relationship with them, this is what they're saying to me.
Yes, as long as you're going to listen to them, that's what they're going to tell you. So outside of that conversation, what's possible?
I don't remember is what I'm thinking right now.
You don't remember?
Yeah, I don't remember. And just like a little kid that wants to cry.
Mm.
I don't remember. I'm
uh-huh.
supposed to know something. I know it's better. I know it's better than this, but I forgot what it is.
Uh-huh. Well, maybe outside of that conversation is feelings. You're just like a little kid who wants to cry. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah. That was funny. Are you still here? Yeah, one of us is. Yes. So, yeah. Yeah, I'm really buying into its story.
Yeah.
Buying into its story that because I'm buying into it, that means I deserve to suffer. I mean, it's all
yeah.
doing it.
Because
yeah.
you're buying into a story, you deserve to buy into a story.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then just almost like seductive, like, come on, just do the debate one more time. Come on, let's go over it. Should we do the session? Should we not? Let's go over it once more.
And if you could imagine a place where the debate is over, there's no more time, it's just time to go or not go, what occurs to you?
Spaciness, like spacey, nobody's here.
I'm sorry?
Oh, I'm spacey, I get spacey.
You get spacey?
Spacey, yeah. Can't think of an answer.
Mm-hmm.
What are you talking about? I don't
mm-hmm.
understand what you're saying. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Boy, it's just really loud. So,
What's it saying?
Trying to do it right. I can't believe you called in the radio show with this. People have real problems.
Mm-hmm.
Blah, blah, blah. Then it'll jump on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
This is a real problem if you could see it for what it is. This is the crux of the universal problem. I mean, it's just like, it'll grab anything.
Yeah, and that's
yeah.
that's what it does. So you're really getting to have a front row seat on what conditioning
yeah.
does, which is to basically say there's a right answer, and what's wrong with you that you can't figure it out?
Yes.
And then
if you're
come have a conversation with me ad nauseum so
uh-huh.
we can realize there's something wrong with you because you can't figure it out.
Yeah.
There's a right answer, but I'm not going to tell you what it is. You need to figure it out, and because you can't,
that's
proof,
proof
that there's something
that
wrong with you.
You deserve to suffer.
Mm-hmm. So, Christine, what do you think that little person needs who's stuck in the middle of all of that?
I don't know. Reassurance that there's not a right answer.
There's not a right answer. Reassurance that there's not a right answer. Yeah. And do you think you can offer that to her?
No, I don't know. I don't know. I think that I get confused, or I'm identified with her, and she thinks she's the one that has to give it to herself, and she's
uh-huh.
just like, okay, I can pretend to be an adult. I can pretend to give this to myself. I'm going to do it right. I'm going to do it perfectly, and then I won't ever feel bad ever again.
But what you know on some level
yeah.
I'm hearing
yeah.
is that there isn't a right answer. That you get caught in this debate that there is a right answer and you need to figure it out. But on some level, there is a deep knowing that there isn't a right answer.
Right. Yeah, it's nice to remember that.
And it's what we've been talking about the whole show, that what we need is reminders that reflect that deep knowing to us. Okay, here I am. Yes, there's no right answer. Yes, I get pulled into the conversation. But there is a right answer, and you've got to figure it out. Come back to the breath. There's not a right answer. I'm right here. It's okay. I have no idea what's going to happen. It's okay. I don't need, there's nothing to figure out. You know, it's so antithetical to conditioning to say there's nothing to figure out, because conditioning has its life, its existence in figuring things out, or attempting to, you know, in thinking. That's what conditioning does. It tries to figure things out and then points out to you that you're a bad person because you can't figure them out.
It always comes down to this equation I get told, blah, 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 equals you deserve to suffer.
Right.
I mean, blah, blah, blah. You're buying into it, or blah, 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 you shouldn't buy it, or you did, or you're going to buy
yeah.
it, or you did,
the,
or you didn't.
The bottom line, is you deserve to suffer.
You're suffering, you deserve it.
Mm-hmm. And so I hear that you know that's not true on some level.
Right, because I'm calling in.
Mm-hmm. You know that there's no right answer. You know that it's not possible. There's nothing to figure out, and that you don't deserve to suffer.
Okay. I'll keep practicing, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we do. We keep on practicing to come back to that. And, you know, it's a knowing that has nothing to do with the head. It has to do with the body, with the heart, with being, you know, that's why we call it being centered. It's with being, with breathing, with being in our bodies and getting in touch with the presence of being here, being present. And then, you know, all that conversation drops away, because all that conversation is suffering. That's all it is. The minute our attention gets pulled up into that debate, you know, we're just fodder for conditioning. We're just going to be suffering. So as much as you can, practice dropping that and coming back to the breath. That's the work.
There's one more reassurance I think that she needs, which is like, your survival's not at stake in this decision.
Yeah,
maybe breaking that down a little.
That's true for all of us. The way we get pulled into our head into that conversation is we end up believing it's a life and death situation, that our survival is at stake. And, you know, one of the things conditioning does is tells us things that are not true.
Right. It's
and
just
that's
not true.
Not true. Your survival is not at stake.
Right. If I go to the session, if I don't and I work, either way, my survival's not at stake, which I'm being told. And if I don't go and I stay home and I don't work and I procrastinate, my survival is not at stake. Yeah.
You know, on some level, it doesn't matter what decision you make. What matters is that you be kind to yourself.
Yeah, right.
And what conditioning wants to do is set it up to say that no matter what decision you make, you deserve to suffer. But no matter what decision you make, you deserve to be with somebody who's going to show you compassion.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Christina, for joining us. And we're going to take another quick break here.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
Okay.
The Zen Blues Quartet is a collaborative music project celebrating life and the music of the blues. Good musicians and good friends coming together to make something really beautiful simply because we can. Zen blues music. For myself, as a Zen student, I see a direct connection between playing the blues and awareness practice, because for me, both seem to require a willingness to be really present in the moment. Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention.
What a life, what a life.
Please visit us at www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
You are listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber, with our guest tonight, and from the Monastery Peace Center. And we have two more callers, so I think we better get to them.
Okay.
So, caller, could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Todd.
Hey, Todd.
Hi, Todd.
Hi. It sounds like Melinda?
It's Ann.
Okay. Ann. Hi, Ann.
Hi.
Just wanted to call in and check in.
Well, good for you.
Yeah. I had the opportunity to attend the May There's Nothing Wrong to retreat and have you as one of my facilitators. So it's nice to touch base again. And share some things that I've been noticing since transitioning back, which is always really interesting.
So what have you been noticing?
Well, I noticed the first week was quite euphoric, which conditioning just waiting in bay for me, just waiting like, okay, all right, enjoy the...
It's going to creep back in at some point, but
yeah,
I'll give you that first week.
Gave me the first week of just not a lot of chatter. Just brought back the tools and was using them consistently, and then the last 2 weeks it's been very noisy, very very noisy, and it's not even it's interesting this time because it does get more subtle and it gets more sneaky. But what I'm seeing is it's not directing the hate at me now, it's directing it outward. At all
that
my
is more subtle, isn't it?
It's way more subtle because what it was because I took it. This is the second time I've taken this retreat.
Mm-hmm.
2 years apart. So I got a lot more, I'll say, depth and insight this time in seeing what really causes my suffering. And for me, it was that little child that was traumatized and severely wounded as a very small 2-3-year-old. Mm-hmm. And I got to really see, wow, oh, I see, this is it, this is it. And I got to see where, for me, it's really that mentor. It's really creating that relationship with that small child and me being the grown-up and giving it the love and acceptance it never got as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And I really,
but only
really,
you really know what that little part of you needs.
Yeah, and I've been giving it and giving it and giving it and using, and I won't give away the retreat because I know it's so precious. So I've been using all the tools, the great toolkit, and I've been really using them this time. And conditioning ain't happy.
Mm-hmm.
Because last time I didn't have, I don't know what how it happened, but after the first retreat, I brought the toolbox home, but it didn't get opened. Conditioning really got to set it aside.
That's a very, very common experience for people.
Yeah.
They come and have a transformative week, and then it just kind of gets set aside, and you're one of the lucky ones. You decided, well, I'm going to go do that again.
Yeah, because I really saw that. I was in a place of just, I heard a previous caller say pseudo-zen, and I saw my conditioning take over my awareness practice, and I thought, you know, I need to go back and reinstill these things that I have a sense that are, you know, for me, ending suffering, but I'm really suffering.
Right. It's kind of what we've been talking about the whole show, the reminders. You saw for yourself that you had had that experience, but somehow the reminders weren't built in enough and you'd forgotten it and you needed to come back and get more reminders.
Right. Right. And now implementing these reminders, which I do consistently, my mentor has just gotten so much stronger. It's just, I'm just competing with the voices. It's like they'll say something, my mentor says something. They say something, my mentor will say two things. It's like my mentor is just so protective now of that small child. And it's like, if you want to yammer on, I'll yammer on. And it's kind of interesting that, so that what happens with my condition now, it's now looking at my external circumstances, looking at my situation, and there's a duality that I talked a lot about at the retreat, and now it's really just, it's using that hate against all the external circumstances in my life, not towards me, but it's hate anyways.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Self-hate or other hate.
About how it can be self-hate or other hate. It's still self-hate.
Right.
But it becomes a lot trickier because we think, oh, this might be real if it's about other people.
Right. And what it's doing, or what I'm feeling, is the three-year-old gets exposed when these voices come in, and then I get this super charge of emotion. I get this super just wicked stab of energy, which I'm starting to disidentify with. Oh, it's just energy, just energy. Doesn't mean anything. Prior to that, it was like the previous caller was saying, is that I feel like my life is being threatened. Like, oh, my goodness, my survival's at stake here. That's how it feels initially.
Yes.
Until the mentor comes in and says, no, it's okay. It's okay, just energy. You're just reacting from a place of fear and from a place of not having maturity, I sense, or, you know, as a small child would.
And it can feel so real, can't it?
Oh, and it's, this last 2 weeks has been, you know, without the archives, I live on the archives, and I was going to make an intention to call and check in after the retreat, because Sherry, I talked to 3 months ago, said, well, you know, here's your intention to go to the retreat. Definitely call in and follow up with us. And doing this is another part of supporting practice. And just using the archives and using all the tools from the retreat, I just find have just been invaluable, because it is, and I think Sherry has said this and the Buddha said this, going further, faring worse.
Mm-hmm.
Going further, faring worse. And I feel that right now, because my awareness is up, but I'm also much more aware of the emotions, and much more aware of the three-year-old panicking, much more aware of the mentor coming in, but I'm also much more aware of the hate.
Well, it sounds like the volume has been turned up on those voices, that you're able to really see them more for what they are.
Yeah.
And hear them in a way you couldn't hear them before.
No, I really couldn't.
Yeah.
I couldn't really hear them, and certainly the... Just once again, the gratitude expressed to all the monks, and maybe a quick shout-out if they're out on the porch listening. Again, thanks again for all the privileged environment. It's just so special. And I try to bring that to my daily life here. I try to think, you know, I'm going to go out in the world. I'm going to just use a little privileged environment here. I'm going to kind of keep customized. I'm not going to kind of watch what other people are doing. I'm not going to see if they're watching me. And I find that's really helpful in my practice, just bringing that out in the world sometimes, you know, because it's a reminder that it's really not that important. It's the internal work that's really important.
To pay attention to what's going on inside.
Yeah, because when I get...
Pay attention to what other people are doing.
Yeah, because when I get distracted by the externals, my internal gets... my internal survival system or the conditioning gets a chance to reinstate itself. So that's kind of what
it's
it wants
like
to
your
do.
Your attention is you're distracted.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
It's like, look over there, look over there. Meanwhile, it's building a fortress.
Yeah, what are they doing? Oh, what is she? Are they looking? Oh, you know, yeah. And all of a sudden, before I know it, I'm in kind of, I've got those emotions again, and my little three-year-old's kind of panicking, and it's like, oh, they're freaking out. And so I kind of have to get, like you say, back to the breath and back to center. But there's probably another caller. We have another caller behind me. I think there is.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to give them an
opportunity. That's a really good point, though, Todd. I just want to reflect that when our attention gets pulled outward, that can be a signal for us, oh, we need to bring it back, because there's all this stuff going on inside that we're not paying attention to. It's a distraction. So good for you for noticing. And thank
and when
you
I'm not attending
for calling
to it,
in.
I suffered. Well, it's really great to hear again. Thanks again, and I just want to express quick gratitude to all the people, all the monks, Sherry, and all the support people that were there for that retreat. that allowed me to participate and just support my practice so much. I'm just so grateful, and I want to let them all know how important it is to me and the Sangha, and great to hear your voice, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, thanks for calling in.
Thanks, Ann. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Todd. And that was so wonderful. It's such a good reminder to the whole thing about practice and participating and everything. We'll get right to our next caller.
Okay.
So,
forum, huh?
Yeah. Let me see. Unmute them. Hang on. So, caller, welcome. You're on the air. Could you introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Emily calling from Arizona.
Hi, Emily.
Hi, I was also at the May retreat. That's pretty funny. did I call it the wrong time? I feel like so confused. Is this show like almost over or something?
Yeah, it goes from 5 to 6 Pacific Standard Time.
Okay, maybe I'm just confused about what time zone I'm in. Okay. All right. Well, okay, so that means I have like 5 minutes, right?
Well, Emily, you have a few more minutes, yes, and then guidance always is that to call in early in the next show, and you can continue the conversation if you don't get it all in.
Okay, well...
And Phil, you'll let us know when we're out of time, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Okay, well, I guess I'm just calling to report kind of how I've been doing, like, since the retreat, and I'm really, I've been using, like, a lot of the tools, and I've just been so really grateful that, I don't know, that I keep finding the moment again, and it's just really... It's just so beautiful and, like, such a miracle. And I recently kind of have been discovering a lot that there isn't anything except for the moment. Mm-hmm. Like, I just kind of was having a problem, and now it's not really a problem anymore. And I realized, like, I was I'm going to Mexico next week, and I was very worried about being sick, and I kind of started panicking about it. And I just kind of relaxed and realized that it wasn't happening at all.
You
like,
weren't in that,
that
moment
just,
now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, that's not anything that's happening. And it feels like so much easier to do everything when it's just moment by moment, you know?
Yeah, isn't that the truth? It's so much easier to do everything when it's just moment by moment. Yeah, and I love the way you described it, finding the moment. Finding
exactly.
The moment. Exactly. Right. And, you know, because when that voice is in there telling you, oh, you got to worry because, you know, this might happen or that might happen. You might get sick and it's all this future stuff that who knows if it's going to come to pass. And if we can just take it moment by moment, life is so much easier.
Yeah, and I just, my heart is just filled with joy. I mean, ever since that retreat, you know, everything is just, I don't know. I mean, it kind of sounds like, you know, one of those Zen paradoxes, but, you know, hard work doesn't always have to be hard. I don't know if that makes sense. You know, I'm finding that to be true, you know, like I'm finding these things I thought were going to be hard just when I am there, here, now, they're not hard because they're not a problem. I guess.
Because you're there in the moment with them, and right now in this moment, there's not a problem.
Exactly.
Yeah, and conditioning would tell you, oh, this is going to be really hard. This is going to be really hard. But your experience tells you that's not true.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just love this practice so much. I am just so happy I found it because, the great thing about it is you can just practice all the time.
That's
and
the great thing about it, isn't it? It doesn't matter where you are, it goes with you.
Yeah. So, I don't know. So, I think I just, you know, everything's really good, and I just wanted to report that, yeah, I'm really loving the practice, and, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for calling in and checking back in. It's great to hear that. And I hope you'll continue to listen to the show and call back in.
Yeah, I will. And next time I'll get my time is right, I guess. Or
yeah,
maybe
you might
not.
Be on
Let's
an hour difference.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Emily.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, Emily, and thank you for calling. You know, that was a wonderful way to end the show, wasn't it, Anne?
Yeah, but life isn't—it doesn't have to be hard. We can just take it moment by moment.
Yes, and it's just a joy in each moment when we do it that way, no matter what's going on.
That's a good reminder for all of us.
It certainly is. Well, thank you, Anne, for being our Zen guide tonight. It was wonderful to have you on Open Air with Living Compassion. With Sherry Huber.
Thank you, Phil, for being our guest host. You did a great job.
Well, thank you. There's certainly a lot of hidden buttons to be.
Oh, yeah.
And we have to hand it to Michael for being able to.
Yeah, he makes it look easy, doesn't he?
He makes it look really easy. But it was quite fun. It was a joy for me to be able to be the host for tonight's show. So we'll say goodnight. And thank you, Anne, and good night.
Good night, Phil.
And good night to all the listeners.
All right. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.